Hi, everyone. This is Catherine Adams.
And Elizabeth Wallace. And special guest...
Hannah Wallace!
Woo! Yay! And you're listening to Binary System Podcast number 460. And tonight, we're watching something that Hannah has been wanting us to watch for a while. We've watched the very first episode of Station 11, which I've been hearing a lot of good stuff about.
Yeah, and I was very pleased when we watched the first episode. I did not remember one of the main parts of the episode about...
We should say that you read the book.
Yes, because I read the book ages ago, posted a review. We will post a link to the review in this episode. But, so I didn't remember the whole thing about the one hapless guy, like, having to rescue this little theater kid.
That's so funny, because I think either because it's the central part of the first episode, or because most of the story kind of focuses on her, I feel like... that's the biggest story, so yeah, it's very funny.
Right. And I found a copy of Station 11 in one of the bookstores we went to this weekend, and I flipped through the first chapter, and yes, it's all in there.
Oh, nice. So, okay, good.
But what I did remember was that absolute panicky feeling of the world is coming crashing down, and you are running out of ways to contact the people that you care about.
Oh, man. I've only wrote three notes down for the entire episode, and so we'll start with the first one. I've written down, amazing that they kept the tension that ramped up for that long.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, so I guess we should back up a little bit. The episode starts with an actor dying of a heart attack on stage.
And we should say a quote-unquote heart attack.
Yeah. And there's some like little flashback bits about somebody that he knows bringing him a copy of a graphic novel that she just finished, and apparently there's a little bit of antagonism between the two of them about that, and then I guess he ends up giving it to a little theater girl, so she's got it with her. It's kind of the touchstone for the entire book, I think.
And the graphic novel is called Station 11, at least it is in this case.
So Jeevan. He is just somebody who was in the audience. Apparently, he's like having a bit of a tiff with his girlfriend. He runs upstairs when he sees that the guy is having a heart attack, but he's not medically trained or anything. He just seemed to realize before anybody else that someone's going on.
Yeah, his sister is a doctor, we learn soon after.
Yeah.
Right.
So he's like he stays back to talk with the police because, of course, the actor dies, and... when he comes out, he can't get up with his girlfriend, and he notices this little theater girl that he had seen backstage, and she's waiting for somebody to pick her up, because everybody seems to have forgotten that there's this little girl who needs somebody to take her home, or to, like, let her know, her parents know where she is, something like that.
There's chaos backstage. Yeah. They do a great job of showing so many people just running around, and nobody's paying attention to any particular person. They've all got their own agendas.
Right. And I mean, which is going to be like normal in any backstage situation, but this is a backstage where someone died on stage, so it's like even more.
Not a situation we're familiar with.
Thank God.
Only dying metaphorically.
Yes, dying metaphorically. Yes. I did that on stage one time, but I had help when two of us dropped a Tiny Tim on stage. So it was a whole thing.
Tiny Tim.
Yes. Yes. It was an entertaining death on stage.
Yes, it was. Yeah. But anyway, so... meanwhile, Jeevan is getting a phone call from his sister who's telling him there's this new flu out there. And it goes from, yeah, this is really bad, to all of a sudden her saying, you have to get to your brother's place now and barricade the doors. That's how bad it's gotten all of a sudden.
That scene inside the train car, like the dread on his face, like this, like he even says something like, is this happening? Is this, because you imagine if there was like a disaster and everything, how you would react, but he's just suddenly dropped into the middle of it and he's looking over the kid and the kid's looking at him. And I just, oh my God, my heart was racing during that scene because he goes into a full on panic attack.
Well, especially because there's this juxtaposition between what he's hearing, what he's going through, and these people who are watching some sort of sports game and cheering, you know, there's everyday life still going on, and he realizes before they do that it's the end of the world.
Oh my God. And
The little girl, Kirsten, is that?
Kirsten,
yeah. She actually follows him off the train when he gets off due to his panic attack, because now she's worried about him, and they end up having to walk all the way to her house, but nobody's home. And it's like, and her phone battery has died, and of course, all her contact information is in her phone. And part of me is going, it's like, you can't find a charger anywhere?
Well, that's the thing. That's what I'm talking about, the tension being ramped up. Because obviously, it's the tension of the world coming to an end. Yes, clearly. But it's also trying to get someone home, being responsible for somebody, watching somebody's battery dying, and they're not, like, putting the phone down, all that. Nobody's coming to the door. Even when he goes to a grocery store and starts stocking up, and there's a moment when you look at the cashier's screen and everything, and it says $9,000. I could not believe the spike of panic in my heart at that moment. I'm like, $9,000.
I thought for sure his card was going to get rejected. I mean, there's literally, like, what, five shopping carts full of stuff that at he's least, stockpiling? Yeah.
Well, I love how that scene starts, because he, you know, he gets Kirsten to go into the grocery store with him, and he picks up a basket because he's starting to have a panic attack again. And, you know, he's supposed to be stocking up, and he's got a basket, and he can't figure out what to buy. And his sister had told him a story, a history between the two of them about Yoo-hoo, so he goes to get Yoo-hoo. And he's just like, and then he snaps to it. He's like, okay. And then he goes back and they get all these cards.
Yeah, because he said, this is about the point where I would have a panic attack, but I kind of already did that. Yeah. So now he's now going beyond panic.
So my next note that I had in here comes at this scene right after, because of course she, you know, tries to go home and nobody's there, and he's exasperated. And he's like, well, I can't leave you here. Come with me to do an errand. They go to the grocery store, have all that. And then they're out in the parking lot and she's trying to figure out what the hell is happening. Is that? No, it's actually later. Get there. So he finally tells her, he's like, I can't tell you what to do. I can't, you know, you don't, there's nobody taking care of you, but I can't say you have to come with me because that's actually kidnapping. You have to decide. And she's like, okay, I want to go home. He's like, all right. And he lets her walk off a few steps. And then he's like, oh, wow, what do you know? My phone and your parents, and they say that you're supposed to come with me. And I'm sorry, the world's not ending, actually. It was completely wrong. And she's smiling at him. And my notes are just like, she totally knows he's full of shit, but she really appreciates he's saying this, right? Like, she knew that he was lying, right?
It takes the hard decision away from her. Because the grown-up is telling her, everything's fine, and you can now come with me instead of having to go home where nobody is probably waiting for you. And, you know, if the parents are outside, there's a good chance that they're already getting infected. So if she goes home, she could be going to an infectious place, whereas he knows his brother is in his 40th floor apartment by himself. It seems like he's a bit of a shut-in.
Oh, he says, he actually says, he's like, now is the time you should be answering your phone, you goddamn hermit. I should also say that, just to add that the way they build the chemistry between Kirsten and Jeevan is really, it's so subtle, but it's so wonderful. That the little bits of humor that are thrown in there, and the fact that he can do that, he's freaked out, but also trying to care for her and do a little humor at the same time. And she's kind of doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm. So, and meanwhile, the entire time we're seeing this episode, you keep seeing the modern day setting, and then all of a sudden it flashes to the apocalyptic setting, which is just the same place, only completely overgrown with plants and, you know, ceilings falling in. You see that one theater, and it's this beautiful, almost a forested meadow kind of thing. So you can see that things have just been growing for decades.
That's actually the first shot of the series. You see all these pigs and you're just like, what is happening? And it kind of goes, it's like almost like an electric static kind of noise, and it flips over and all of a sudden there's a performance going on, and the shot has you're still looking at it from the exact same angle, but there's a totally different thing.
So you know what's going to happen before anything happens.
Yes,
so you're just waiting
for
all of this to go very, very wrong.
Now, the other thing that I liked is, as we're flipping back between the two of them, we're also looking at his sister who works in a hospital, and we're watching the chaos descend, and we're watching this, like, just completely matter-of-fact thing. I love that they're all talking to each other, and they're just having this completely calm conversation about, hey, who did you call? And it means, like, the world's going to come to an end. Who did you just make a call to? And I, like, one of their friends is like, I just went on Twitter and I said bye. You know, but they're just like, no, this is just beyond bad.
And again,
they're just like, what are they going to do? They just have to keep on keeping on.
The sense of chaos in the hospital is just incredibly well done. I mean, I think you just get this feeling of tension. Nobody knows what to do. The doctors are running around trying to stay in control, and there's panicky people, and then they walk outside, and there's panic outside, and eventually there's this pullback shot up into the air, and you see all these cars, all this traffic driving to the hospital.
And Jeevan, yeah, even as he and Kirsten are pushing all those carts back to his brother's place, she says, "Jeevan," and you look forward, and there's a car that's like its nose is pressed up against a tree or something, and the wheels are just spinning in the snow.
We should say this is Chicago in the wintertime, so it's icy cold, snowy, which also has this apocalyptic feeling to it, too.
Yes. And Jeevan is like, he walks up to it, is like, "Hello," and this guy sitting in the driver's seat just looks around, and you can tell even through all the ice and the snow, something's really, really wrong.
They shoot a little bit from inside the car, and you can hear him wheezing.
He starts to open the door, and Jeevan just slams it closed. He's like, "I'm sorry, man, you can't open the door, I've got a kid with me." And he's just like, that's how bad it's gotten. And he's like backing away. "I'll call an ambulance for you." He's not going to be able to call an ambulance for him.
No.
I mean, he can call it. It's not going to.
Nothing's going to happen. That was one thing that I liked when they go outside and there's all the panic and everything and people rushing around and, you know, just chaos everywhere. There's a guy with his daughter, and they could have played it like the typical, you know, "You've got to help my daughter," and screaming. And this guy, he's just like, "Hi, I'm so sorry to bother you," you know?
And she's like, unconscious in his arms.
Yeah. Oh, my. She might even be dead at this point. But it's just like, I thought that was such a great, because they're always going to be both those kind of people. The people who are just like, "You have to help me before anybody else." And the people who are like, "I know you're really busy, but," and they're like, "Yeah, come with me." And it's just, it made your heart hurt.
And did you recognize the actress who played Jeevan's sister?
No.
She was in The Good Place. She was the fake Eleanor.
Oh my God, that's where I saw her before. She's really good.
She's very good. She's like that holding on to your sanity by your fingernails sort of thing, and just deciding, well, we better get to it.
Just sort of taking control. It's like, well, we're doctors. We get sick from what other people have all the time. So here we go.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, because that's one of the first times we actually see her. She's talking to a bunch of kids. She's got a mask on, and they're all in the waiting room. She's like, "Yeah, we're working on your parents. I just want to make sure nobody's hot, nobody's sick, nobody's throat hurt." Okay, and she leaves the room, and as soon as she shuts the door, she starts coughing. You're like, oh, God, the cough of death. Oh no, God. That's no good. Well, wow. But through all this, they actually manage, I don't know how long they were supposed to be walking, but they actually get all those carts to the building. And again, I love how the kid just instantly knows to play along with everything that he's saying to the security guard.
Yeah, because Jeevan tells the security guard he's here to see his brother on like the 45th floor or something. And this is his niece, my niece, both of our nieces. And she's like, "Hi."
Yeah, and then he calls up to Frank, and he's just like, you know, "There's this guy here, and with your niece," she's like, "Hi, Uncle Frank."
Actor. Yeah. She knows how to play along.
And the security guard, who just seems kind of bored, but sort of friendly and everything, is just like, "Yeah, go ahead and go up." He just kind of gives him a side eye, like, "I don't know what's going on. I don't want to get into it." But then they go to get in the elevator, and there's a woman who tries to get in the elevator with them.
And Jeevan has to shout her down, because he's like, "Oh, I think we're really full."
And she's like, "No, I'll just put it in." He's like, "We're full." And she looks all offended. It's like, I mean, bless you, because that's hard to do, to like offend someone like that. But like, stay out of the elevator.
She's trying to cut down on the vectors of infection at this point.
Oh, man. I like when the door closes and he doesn't look over at Kirsten, but you hear him very quietly say, "It's really full."
So they get into the condo, and the brother is just like, he doesn't want to deal with this. He doesn't understand what's going on. He doesn't watch the news.
He opens the door, and we should say Frank and Jeevan are both Indian, or background of Southern Asian.
Mm-hmm.
And Frank uses a cane. And he opens the door, and there's Jeevan and Kirsten and all of these shopping carts full. And he just looks up very calmly and says, "Jeevan? The white girl?"
It was amazing. Yeah. But they finally managed to get him to let them in, and they're just pushing all these. He's like, "I don't want any of this stuff. I don't need any of this stuff." And his brothers mean, "Why don't you watch the news?"
So it's just argue. And then you hear this rumbling sound.
And you see Kirsten, as they're arguing, Kirsten is just looking out the window, and it sort of looks like she's just surveying the city, because he's got these great, you know, floor-to-ceiling windows.
And the rumbling gets louder, and one of them says, "What is that?" And Kirsten said, "I think it's that." And an airplane swings by the building and crashes into the building next to them.
I That, I mean, I can't tell you how much I love stuff like that. It was so unexpected and it was so well done. The sound, the visuals, I mean, they just stand there and watch it just roar past. And I'm like, all the hairs on my arms are standing. I'm just even thinking about it. It was absolutely, this whole episode was great. But that moment, I'm like, oh, I'm in.
Now, I love the fact that through flashbacks, we're going to continue to see the little girl who plays Kirsten because she's excellent. And we're going to still follow along in these storylines. At the same time, what a badass thing that would have been if they have decided to end the first episode by just taking out the characters that we've spent the entire episode getting to know. I thought that plane, I didn't remember what was happening from the book. I thought there was a good chance that wing could just slice right through the apartment.
I feel like that's close. A hard way to get people to keep watching a series, true. Though, if you do that.
You will reach an entirely different audience for something like that.
And we should also say that there are other little things sprinkled out, because it does already show you how it's going to be jumping back and forth in time through different things. There's another character, the Irish man. I can't remember his name. Did anybody write that down?
Nope. I did not.
But he winds up being a fairly main character too. So there's a real ensemble here, as does to an extent. What's his name? Arthur. The actor who dies.
We do get to find out his history.
He's played by somebody famous.
Oh, God, I don't know.
I think it's a Mexican actor. I'm going to look it up. But so you have these little introductions to a lot of the other characters, and you'll find out just about their histories and their futures, what happens to them. It's really fascinating.
Yeah. And now we are both sitting here going on our phone to try to find...
You're quicker draw than I am. We should actually, first of all, we should say that the girl who plays Kirsten...
Oh, yeah.
First of all, the grown-up Kirsten is Mackenzie Davis.
Yes. Who we have seen her from San Junipero.
Yes. Oh, shit, that's right. Yep. Yes.
Blade Runner 2049. That's
yes. Her.
And then the young Kirsten is Matilda Lawler.
Yes, who I've probably seen her in some things, but I can't remember.
She's very good.
Yeah, she's very good. I'm trying to find Arthur now. Wow, he's way down the list. It's Arthur, right?
Yeah.
Oh.
Gael Garcia Bernal.
Ah. What else have we seen him in?
I feel like he's done Spanish language things.
He was in Old, which I never actually saw.
Nope, me neither.
Maybe he's just... Oh, Coco.
Oh, he played Hector in Coco, so...
Oh, interesting. All right, so his voice is familiar at any rate.
Yep, not recognizing anything else.
I know he's famous.
He's totally famous. I mean, his face is so recognizable, and I don't think it's just from, like, the promos for Station 11, so...
Oh, no.
I don't think so.
The episode could have ended there, but we flash forward to the future, and we see adult Kirsten, and she's reading that graphic novel.
Yep, and apparently it seems to be something that she actually has a lot of fondness for, because you see her just lying in a sunny field as someone tells her that the rehearsal's about to start, and she's just, I'll be there in a minute, and she's just kind of like, I don't know, caressing the pages as she's reading it. So, the last thing that we had seen of Jeevan was him, like, going to the door in the condo and looking out in the hallway and then closing it, and you hear it click. And then it opens again, and it's 80 days later, and he and Kirsten are packing up and heading out.
And it's just he and Kirsten, they're heading out, and he says, let's head toward the lake, which you assume is... Lake Superior, I think, is the one that Chicago's on.
I can't remember which one.
Unfortunately, I am not good at my lake's geography.
Me neither,
terrible.
And then that's it. That's when we see them walking along. I think they're walking in between. There's a big zoom up of the area and, like, lines and lines of cars that obviously just stopped when the world stopped, and they're probably filled with dead bodies and everything.
Oh, and they've got like a foot and a half of snow on them.
And security guard that they had talked to.
That's
the first thing they see when they go down the stairs is they go to the security area, and he's still there, and he's just lying with his head on the desk, and he's obviously done.
I mean, whatever it was, it just happened so fast.
Yeah.
We're not talking about it was a little more drawn out in the stand, right? With the sickness that they got there.
It took longer because at least one scientist who got exposed had enough time to get in the car and then go get his family and pack them all up and drive somewhere else where they then infected everybody else.
Yeah.
It's more like 28 days later kind of fast.
Yeah,
except they don't become zombies. They just die.
Which reminds me, we all need to watch 28 Weeks Later. I mean,
I know.
Jeremy Renner is in this. I'm not sure why we haven't watched 28 Weeks Later yet. I mean, 28 years later, we'll be out like this month.
I know. I got to get caught up. But yeah, I am totally in. It was about midnight when I finished up the episode last night, and I really had things I needed to do this morning. So I was like, no, I cannot start another episode. I was close. It really was.
Well, reading the book was what got me started on the whole idea that we need an apocalypse plan, because it's like your family members are scattered to the four winds, so you can't actually check, and you don't want to like have one person heading east and the other person heading west, and you miss each other by like 50 miles. So the apocalypse plan is to go down to mom and dad's place in Florida. However, Hannah pointed out it might be a good idea to make a pit stop at Granny's library first.
Because you had originally said, because I remember when you said this, you said mom and dad's place, unless that's not possible, and then we'll go to the library, Granny's library.
Yes.
And I was like, okay, but how are you going to know that it's not possible to get to mom and dad's place?
Right. It's like if it's flooded. True. You can't exactly get up on a high place and look over and say, oh, there's water there now. So,
yes.
So I don't know. Maybe should we arrange just as a centralized place, Granny's library instead?
Sure. I'm like, that's totally fine with me. I mean, that's
party at Granny's library.
Yeah, exactly.
But if I'm with mom and dad, we don't have cars. We're staying at mom and dad's house.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Exactly. But we stop at Granny's place first.
That's totally exactly.
So, So that's it for that.
Wait, I did want to say, though, shout out. The reason that I started watching this was that I was talking with John Moriarty, and he just happened to bring up that he'd been watching this program, and he wanted to recommend it, and said it was called Station 11. And I was like, oh, what's it about? And he's like, okay, here it is. Post-apocalyptic Shakespearean troupe. And I was like, I'm on board.
Kevin? How could you not? Oh, my God.
And it's about so much more than that, but that really is kind of the beating heart of it. I mean, Arthur, when he dies at the very beginning, is performing King Lear.
Mm-hmm.
So it's got that sort of Shakespearean aspect to it.
Yeah. Well, it was something I really love, the idea that you've got to survive, you've got to get enough food, you've got to get shelter, you know, clean water, try to find medicine somewhere. You got to have entertainment. Everybody has to have it if you're going to have a civilization that's worth keeping alive.
And I suppose this is a little bit of a spoiler, but I already said post-apocalyptic Shakespearean acting troupe, and we saw Kirsten in the future. It does show a lot of that, and it's this really interesting balance of just how, you know, however many years, 18 years in the future, how things shape up. You know, there are this acting troupe that goes around, and they've got a caravan of old cars, but they're pulled by horses. I actually won't go into the other stuff because I don't want to get into spoilers, but there's just different ways that people survive and build communities or don't in some cases. And it's got kind of a Zombies Run, sort of the same a little idea that there are going to be pockets of so many different communities around.
And that was something that from reading the book that they pointed out very close to the beginning, gasoline doesn't stay good forever. You've probably got, of the stuff that's already in the tanks, you've maybe got a few years before it stops working. So this is not going to be a Mad Max kind of situation with people driving, you know, diesel punk cars and shooting each other. All that's done. You have horses or you walk.
Yeah. Yep. Oh, man. I can't wait to see the rest of it. I never read the book, so I'm going to be completely surprised by everything.
Yeah, that was my situation, too. And I was delighted. You just don't know where it's going. But the whole time, as I said, it's so smart. It doesn't try to over-explain things to you. It's a HBO production, so it's really well done. It's really well acted. The script is great. It just kind of leads you along almost aquatically, sort of, like a poem. You just kind of float through it going, I don't know quite what the direction of this is, but let's go.
Oh, thank goodness. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Okay, so the next thing we're going to talk about is that Catherine and Hannah actually watched an episode of an animated show that Hannah had... Now, you hadn't mentioned this to us before, had you?
I did say it over Messenger at some point, that I said, I'm trying this out. It's not really my style. I'm liking it more than I thought I would, because I don't watch a lot of animated stuff, and certainly not the kind of... I would say, is this Japanese style?
It's definitely done in a Japanese style, but it's all English language.
I was thinking
for a second when we first watched it, I was waiting for, it's like, is this an English dub? But you can see the mouth movements matching up with the words. So an entirely English language.
Yeah, and nice. It's Gentry Chow versus the Universe.
Whoops, that was supposed to be Gentry Chow versus the Underworld, and I didn't catch it either. Sorry.
Uh-huh. And it was actually created by a Ringling College grad, and I've been doing some work for Ringling College, so I've become that sort of, ooh, I want to speak about the things their students are doing because I'm really impressed. Nice. It's on Netflix, but it's also the head writer, and the reason that I learned about it in the first place is James Hamilton, who I followed on Twitter, who created Hector Versus the Future, which is a fantastic little, I think, 7-part podcast. Silly, dark comedy. He does a lot of silly, dark comedy. And I thought, okay, well, I'm going to see what he does with this animated stuff. And yeah, it's I think it's fun. I mean, you get a lot of exposition in the first one. It's a little bit maybe aimed at a slightly younger audience. It's like it's set in high school, so I think that's the audience.
And it's a standard trope storyline. You've got a young girl that's just turning 16, I think.
Yes.
She's going to be turning 16.
She's living in Korea at the very beginning.
Yeah.
But we learn later that she's Chinese.
Yep. And she's getting ready to celebrate her birthday with all of her friends, and then she gets chased down by a demon, and then her grandmother shows up out of friggin' nowhere, and it turns out Gentry has powers. She can shoot flames out of her hand. But
sure.
It is not something she has any control over. And her grandmother actually made a deal with a demon, which sounds bad, but it's like she said, leave her alone until she's 16, and then you can come and get her, which gives her enough time to train her to fight this thing. Except not, because you've got actual fatalities happening and there's real stakes. And meanwhile, there's this whole thing that we're dancing around that is the reason why she moved to Korea in the first place, because apparently she burned her town down.
Oh, she's an American, I should say. She's Chinese American, and she grew up in Texas, which is also true of the woman who created it. And so, yes, she was a younger kid, and everybody remembers the demon girl of whatever who burned down the town. So it's this little Texas town, and she's coming back in, and she's hearing about it, but nobody knows it's her who did it.
Right, right. And it's like she's very bouncy. There's, you know, a whole lot of like action stuff that you have in anime. The musical choices are great.
Yes.
I think they did a great job of picking music for action for pretty much anything. But now we've got a little bit of like, maybe she's got a crush on this guy who's also very blithely talking about, well, you know, everybody lost their homes when this happened. And she's like, you know, my family lost all this stuff that we had. Oh, God. But yeah, it's fun, and it's bright, bright colors and really sharp outlines and very dynamic.
Yeah, nice. it reminds me, sort of the teenage angst of it reminds me a bit of Turning Red, the Pixar movie.
Nice.
That immersing yourself in the seriousness and the awkwardness of high school.
Right, right. Now, is it a limited series or is it an ongoing series?
I think they're trying to get it. It's got one season out. I'm not sure if it's been renewed yet.
Okay, good. Yay! I'm always up for a new anime or animation.
Love to hear, because I did watch it all the way through, and I was like, I should watch that again. So,
nice. So you're definitely becoming a Ringling booster at this point.
Oh, absolutely. Well, you know, they give me money sometimes.
That's great. That's even better.
I'm always happy. I was saying to a friend of mine recently, I'm like, I'm still a Sarasota tour guide. Like, I love to talk about the cool things that I know about the town, and Ringling is one of the great things in Sarasota.
Absolutely. But I guess that will wrap us up for the week, so make sure to check out pixelatedgeek.com for all the book reviews, the movie reviews, the comic book reviews, the photo galleries. We are a little over a month away from San Diego Comic Con.
Oh, wow. Is it that time already? God.
Can you believe it? It happens so fast. Oh, my God.
So fast.
So we'll always have that and Hugh's movie reviews. Also, Hannah, have you ever felt like writing a movie review? Of course, you're welcome to participate, but, you know, you get paid for writing, so we don't usually ask you to write.
I mean, I'll tell you what my hourly rate is. Sorry, I hate to do that, but I just can't.
I can't do a side
project.
We can pay you in convention tickets sometimes. It's not a guarantee.
Yes, you have to give me the plane tickets to get to the convention.
That's the expensive part.
All that and more, pixelatedgeek.com. So I guess next week we're going to have a Night Vale episode, I think?
Yes, and I did watch the episode of Star Trek Lower Decks with Tendi going to a wedding on the planet Orion.
Yay.
I have to watch it again. It's delightful.
On that topic, though, I did want to plug the Best Pick podcast and how they just recently did a Deep Space Nine episode. That was really delightful.
Oh, I need to listen to that. Yeah. Yes.
Me too. Totally do. But thank you again, Hannah,
Yay,
for coming and joining
us
on this.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, yes. And one way or the other, we will talk to everybody in 1 week.
Talk to you later. All right, where's the first, the full cast?
Bring out the dancing monkeys.
Oh, stop. Okay, there we go. We'll be cutting out all the extra.
Oh, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.